Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
Word down your way. Out of the attic and into your hood.
Welcome to another edition of Word Down Your Way. Musicians about to go on tour and looking back at some of the first and the best shows they've ever seen and played. And Teenage Fan Club are about to go back on the road in October and November. And thus, Welcome Norman Blake.
Hello.
Norman, lovely to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you too.
I think anybody watching this will just think this is clearly the Gilet brothers.
Yeah,
we're all,
I know.
Here all we are. Give you some idea just how cold it is in Glasgow where you are and in London where we are.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know, it's not too bad here, I don't think, but I guess it's going to get cold the next couple of days, isn't it?
So it is.
Particularly up there, isn't it?
Yeah. We're all set. We're prepared and ready to go.
Absolutely. For you. Absolutely. Well, look, you know, what we tend to do here is just talk about you're going out on tour in October, November. We'll talk about that in a moment. But can you remember the first shows that you saw? Where would that have been? It was Glasgow, probably, because you were born in Glasgow, weren't you?
Yeah, well, actually, it was just outside Glasgow in Coatbridge, and the first band that I've got a band that I saw in the late 60s when I was a baby, which I'll maybe say for a moment or two, but the first band that I chose to go and see was the Wombles.
oh, my God, amazing.
I think 1976 or thereabouts, maybe a bit earlier, 75.
Classic era.
Yeah, I believe.
Did they do all the Minuet Ella Greta, Wobbling White Tarn Tales?
And I'm thinking Mike Batt was there, and possibly Chris Spedding as well.
Yes,
potentially. You know,
well, probably couldn't tell. He was inside an enormous furry suit.
Exactly. I'd like to think that he was inside one of the suits. But the band, the first gig that I went to, and I can't remember this, but it's really, really cool. My parents were on holiday in Blackpool in 1967, and they went to see Tom Jones, but the opening band were the Kinks in 1967. I saw the Kinks in 67.
In Blackpool?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And I can't remember.
How old were you been?
So I was approaching two. So right. I can't remember anything at all about it, but I was looking at that period. And so I guess it's maybe around about the Village Dream Preservation Society.
Absolutely. Yeah, what a fantastic thing to do.
So I'd like to think that we were playing lots of the songs from that album.
Because that was the time when they couldn't tour the States, could they? Because they'd been banned. And so
true.
They ended up literally at the end of the pier.
Yeah, that's right. And that's exactly where I saw them, yeah. Tom Jones and the Kinks, but the Kinks weren't first, so.
Oh, well,
and there
incredible.
You go.
So how old were you when you went to see the Wombles?
So the Wombles, I would have been, let me think, 11 or 12, something
oh, right.
like that. Yeah.
Towards the mature end of the audience.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yes.
For sure.
You felt a bit old and out of place.
Definitely, yeah. But, you know, those records, I mean, I still love those records, you know. I still, you know, I think they sound great, you know. So, I've gone back and I'm a bit of a record collector myself, and I have picked up the Wombles albums, you know, on Discogs. You get them for about £1.50 on Discogs.
Can you? I thought they would have shot up in value.
No, they're quite...
He's kind of hip again, isn't he?
Well, it is, but they're quite an easy band to collect, you know, if you're, you know, in terms of cost.
Right.
So, yeah. So anyway, that was the first one. I remember, I'm thinking it was a great show. Having a great time. I think it was a Saturday afternoon at, you know, like Coatbridge YMCA, something like that.
That's brilliant.
So when did you put away childish things, if we can put it that way?
Sure. Well, I quickly moved on to The Clash, and I saw The Clash a load of times.
So then, The Wombles, then The Clash.
So there's an interesting change.
Yeah, just like I sort of gone to, you know, the high school or whatever, and then the punk rock was sort of happening when I was a 13-year-old, so I could really get into all the punk rock stuff. So, and I did see a lot. I saw some of the great Clash tours, saw the London Calling tour, Sandinista. I think I gave them enough rope as well, just to the tail end of that, maybe. So I saw them a few times, and I said Strump.
Was it quite hair-raising going to see them in those days? Because, gigs before security and things that people get used to nowadays. What was it like?
It was really great. The shows, the two of the Clash shows were the Glasgow Apollo, the famous Apollo. And so, that was a seated theatre. I remembered for having the bouncing balcony.
Right.
Which I did experience. And so it's really amazing, actually. I mean, I loved them, and I still love the Clash. I did get to meet Joe Strummer in LA, when we went over for the first time with Teenage Fan Club, and I mentioned it to him that I saw them, he was very nice and respectful, and we had a good old chat. But they were great shows. They're an amazing live band. They were brilliant.
What was the first time you were?
What about all the Glaswegian bands?
Oh yeah, well, so Orange Juice were the band for me. That was they were the band that made me want to start a band, and I guess the fact that they were doing the postcard thing in Glasgow, and it was really kind of DIY, was really encouraged me. So I saw them quite a number of times in the, when they put out the first postcard singles, and that was quite exciting, the whole postcard thing, Aztec Camera and them. So I saw quite a lot of that stuff, but the first show that we would have played as Teenage Fan Club, actually it was in London, it was at Yulu. We had a friend who was, we'd made an album, we hadn't played any shows, and our friend Dave Barker was putting the album out on his Paperhouse label, and so he put together, I don't think he put the show together, but we were certainly on the bill. I think it was the Pastels, Pale Saints and Ride. And then that was our first UK show. But our first US show was an amazing one, because we kind of very shortly thereafter flew into New York and played at CBGB's. That was our first show in the US. We got to play there a couple of times. So it was, that sort of legendary venue. It was just great to have been able to play there.
Did you have that experience that so many British bands have going to America? The first night is somewhere really cool, like CBGB's or whatever the other New York places were. Yeah. And invariably when they look out, there's Debbie Harry's in the front row or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the following night, they're in Moose Droppings, Ohio. Nobody has heard of them.
Absolutely. You think it's going to all be like this? Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely that. That was the experience. We met Yola Tengo that night. We're still friends with them, but we met them that night. So that's 1989.
Right.
Was that show. But yeah, it was that we played the show in New York. Someone gave us a car. I remember the car had a hole in the, you sat in the passenger seat, there was a kind of hole so you could see the road beneath the car. But somebody had arranged some gigs, one in Philadelphia, and they were just in tiny little bars in the corners, in the window of a bar or whatever. So it wasn't quite the CBGB's experience. But I mean, that was an experience in itself. CBGB's, that was a crazy,
Didn't
crazy
you have
venue.
A period when you were busking as well?
I used to busk with my friend Douglas Stuart from BMX Bandits and Sean Dixon, who was in Soup Dragons, and we used to go into Glasgow and busk.
And what did you play? What kind of stuff?
We played things like, I remember we did Psycho Killer, a couple of Jonathan Richman songs, that kind of thing, a couple of Buddy Holly things.
So I want to know what you think about this, because Mark and I have been talking about this recently. I think buskers nowadays have too much equipment.
Mm-hmm.
It's too loud. You can hear it too far away. You shouldn't be able to do that, should you?
No, they're sort of wheeling their little trolley behind them with the amplifiers and all the stuff on it. Yeah, you just don't want to show them.
They'll have more equipment, I guarantee. They will have more equipment nowadays than Teenage Fan Club would have had when you put your first album out.
I think we had Raymond, I think, had a couple of guitars, and that was it. I didn't have a guitar. So he lent me his guitar so that we could have two guitars playing on the record. So it was like that. You know, we really didn't have much money. And I mean, I think to pay for the recording of our first album, Raymond had inherited from his neighbour a washing machine and a fridge or something, which he sold and bought us some studio time.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
And that's that paid for the most of the we're only in for a couple
nobody's
of days.
Nobody's doing that anymore.
Nobody's doing that. Well, you're not getting much money for a fridge and a washing machine, you know.
No, but they can all record at home nowadays, can't
well,
they?
They can. Definitely, yeah.
It's moved on. So what's the plans for the tour?
Well, actually, we're doing a tour of theatres. We played a couple on last tour and we really enjoyed it. And so I guess part of the idea is to play in places that we haven't played before. You know, what you tend to do is play in the same venues every time you go to a town, you know, Manchester Academy 2 or whatever. And so I think we just thought, let's try and do something a bit different. And the theatre experience was something that we enjoyed. And so that's the kind of idea for the tour.
So it's a seated audience. It's
seated, yeah.
A bit concert-like rather than...
Yeah, for sure, yes. Right. Yeah.
Does that change the energy? You know, because we always hear the bands prefer people to be standing up. Do you go through stages where you prefer them standing up and stages where you prefer them sitting down?
I mean, personally speaking, I quite like going to theatre shows. I like to be able to sit down when I see music. You know,
That's age.
That's getting older.
For sure. But
you wouldn't have thought that when you saw The Clash when you were 14.
No, definitely. Having said that, the Apollo was seated, you know, so I mean, the people did stand up, of course.
Oh, right.
But I suppose it is the thing. I mean, the people that come to see us are getting on a bit too, so I think a lot of them are going to appreciate having a seat, you know. So
Have you gone through that stage? We often hear about this. The bands, you know, they have young audiences, and then the audience kind of grows up a bit, and they're engaged in raising children or whatever, and they don't go out. And then 20 years later, they go out again.
They suddenly come back.
That's definitely a thing. But also, you also meet the kids, you know. Yeah, you'll meet young people and say, well, I really like your music. And I heard it because my folks had the album, you know, and they used to play it. And so they'll get some kind of nostalgic connection to it or something like that, you know. So that's all. But that happens quite a lot these days, you know. It's always good to hear, you know.
So does the set list kind of write itself or, you know, for this tour or?
Yeah, I think we always try to, I mean, I think we always see ourselves as a contemporary band in the sense that we've never broken up. We've always been around. And we always like the idea of playing new music when we play live. I mean, we'll intersperse the set with songs from all of the albums. We definitely do that. But we always like to play, you know, maybe a fifth of the set will be new songs. We just think it's important to do that if we go to the hassle of recording them, you know, writing and recording these songs.
Well, if you don't, you're ostensibly a kind of greatest hits act, aren't you?
Well, exactly. I love you go see Paul McCartney, he does it too. He's like, well,
he does.
I know you don't want to hear these, but I'm going to do them anyway. And I can totally understand why he wants to do them, because those will mean a lot to him.
Make sure he doesn't play two new ones in a row, because
sprinkle them, or do you sprinkle them throughout, or do you put them in a section?
No, I think we'll sprinkle them throughout, you know, and you can always tell people, look, we are going to do a new one, and if you do want to go to the bathroom and get there, you won't be offended. That's okay.
I'm going to get a cheeseburger.
Yeah, you paid your money, you know, so that's okay. I don't mind.
So you know that they'll be back for the hits kind of thing.
For sure, yeah.
That's fine. So you're quite relaxed about it. Oh, that's interesting.
I've kind of gotten to the stage now where I'm telling people, look, we're doing this thing where we're going to pretend that the show's over and we're going to go off stage. But we are actually going to come back on. We're going to play three more songs. So I just like to keep people, you know, up to date with what's happening. But it is funny how everyone does. You go through that pretense of, you know, well, this is the end. Thanks for coming. Good night.
That's right.
You have absolutely no intention of doing that, you know.
John Martin was the first person I ever saw do this. I'm not going off the stage and coming back. Just
if you want some more, clap.
I will stay.
Funnily, John Martin, when I was a youngster, the very first job that I had, I worked in McCormick's music shop in Glasgow. It was around the corner from the Apollo, actually, and a kind of very famous old music shop. And one of the first musicians that I met in there and served as a customer was John Martin. And he came walking in, and I knew who he was. And I was like, wow, John Martin. And one of the guys in the shop nudged me and said, he doesn't pay for anything. I was like, okay. So he came over and he said, hey, how you doing, wee man? Can have a couple of sets of strings. And I was like, there you go, John. And he went to get, you know, his money. And he said, no, you're good. And he was like, oh, cool, wee man. And so there you go. I gave John Martin some guitar strings.
That's lovely. I'm sure I remember a story about you with the Specials, where Terry Hall was incredibly sweet.
Yeah,
tell us what happened there.
Well, do you know, so that was, again, the Specials were playing at Glasgow Apollo. And I was friends with this guy, John Martin, the Dukes, who used to play tambourine in Primal Scream.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said, look, I know where the Specials are staying. You know, I think we can maybe go and blag some tickets. So we went down to the hotel, and sure enough, there in the foyer was Terry Hall. So we went over and we got chatting with him and said, look, we hope to come to the gig. And he said, oh, he's just, you know, just hang out with me. And so he got us a drink and we were sitting in the bar and we were kids. And then he said, okay, here's a sketch. Just come up with us to the venue in the bus. So I was handing like Rico Rodriguez's trombone. So we could go on the bus. When we get to the venue, just walk in with that. Right. You're like a kind of roadie for the day. And we got into the venue and we got backstage and hung out with him. And it was really brilliant.
Right.
And many years later, I was in London and I had Edwin Collins' son, Will, and Terry's son, Theo, in the back of the van. I was kind of driving the van and I said to Theo, listen, say your dad thanks for, you know, I never forgot that. And I ended up hooking up with Terry online and we had a good old chat about it. And so it was just really nice to be able to tell him personally.
That's such a sweet story.
Yeah, it was really amazing, you know.
It's lovely.
Very good.
Good.
So, do we traditionally finish these conversations by asking people, what's the best live show you ever saw?
Okay, well, I think possibly I got to see the Smiths really early on. They played at the QM in Glasgow. I think around about the time This Charming Man came out, just before, it was when they had all the flowers across the front of the stage. And the QM, you know, could maybe hold 400 people, something like that. It's a fairly small room. And they were incredible. I've never forgotten that show. It was absolutely brilliant. You know, it was mesmerizing.
Right.
So I would have to say that was one of them. I did get to see McCartney on my 50th birthday, which was absolutely brilliant too. I mean, Paul McCartney, right? And that was an incredible show too.
That was
in Toronto a few years back. Neil Young, back by Booker T and the MGs.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're cock.
That was pretty good. I found myself, because we played with them that night in Glasgow.
Yeah.
And I found myself, I went for a pee, and I found myself standing next to Steve Cropper, having a pee, and I kind of thought, what did you say? And I just kind of turned around and said, that was an amazing show, Steve. And he was like, hey, thank you very much. So there you go. But I thought, I have to say something. I can't, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you have a pee next to Steve Cropper, you've got to mark the occasion.
Well, you do. For sure.
Because he is surely the greatest guitarist.
He is. Yeah, we were big fans, you know, and I of Neil Young also. But yeah, we always like Steve Cropper's guitar playing. Raymond is a big, big Steve Cropper fan.
Right.
Big influence. So yeah,
and also great. Booker T and the MGs, the original, the greatest band ever.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, love them. Yeah, it's incredible.
We can agree on that.
We're all just going to sit here nodding at each other, aren't we? Quite rightly.
It can't be said too often. Booker T and the MGs, the greatest band.
For sure, yeah.
Well, look, it's been lovely to talk to you.
Likewise, nice to see you both.
And yeah, your delivery hasn't turned up, so we've managed to get through.
Nothing, yeah. I have to carry 10 sheets of plasterboard up 2 flights of stairs. So,
oh, right.
Wish me luck.
Enjoy it.
Fine. For sure.
And as we the traditional sign off, of course, is good luck with the tour.
Thank you very much.
Break a string.
Right, for sure, yeah.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.